Ralph Garman.
Ralph!
Hi, kids.
Thank you so much for carving out time and coming on the podcast. And again, congratulations on your 8 years of the Ralph Report.
Thank you. People
can find it just going to Patreon and searching Ralph Report.
That's right. And you guys are on Patreon as well, right?
So we are.
We're like Patreon brothers and sisters.
Yes, we are.
And family.
Say hi to Corny.
Hi, Corny.
Oh, me again? Well, hi. Let's see what else you're dragging me into this time.
Or not.
He's more short than usual.
He's usually full of snark.
Yeah, he's super snarky.
Yeah, he needs to go to the pub and have a pint and then come back, Corny.
Here's what's funny is we spent so much time trying to make him snarky. And now that he's snarky, you guys are like, we don't like him.
I love it. I love it. I'm just
got a little bit. He's a little bit like on the really dickish side. Can you hear it? Like, there's
yeah.
like,
he's, oh, yeah.
oh, there
he's,
is.
He's
there.
Not
yeah,
doing it to be fun. He's doing it because we're annoying him. Is what he sounds.
It
like.
Sounds like Corny doesn't want to be here.
Corny, are you being held hostage?
Oh, trust me. If I were being held hostage, you'd be the last to know. I'm here, whether I like it or not. So let's just keep going.
He is disgusted with us. You're right, Kat. He is disgust. That's what that is. All right. So we, on a previous episode, had Aisa, the former promotions director, on. And she told us about booking a hotel for the K-Rock Weenie Roast at the same place where they're having a furry convention. We yes. had her on. We talked all about it. And then a viewer or a listener called in and said, hey, Ralph did Ralph Sex You was a bit we did in the 90s, right? It didn't survive much past that.
Early 2000s.
It was,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you did 2000s. Yeah.
And on furries, did a whole thing on furries because we were asking, how do they go to the bathroom? Is it a sexual thing?
Let's talk about Sex You, first of all. So what exactly was that, and what all did you usually do with that?
That was one of the earliest recurring segments I did on the show because it was when Jimmy was still with us, when Jimmy was still on the show doing sports and, you know, creating all that amazing content that he did. I think we got into a conversation in the office or something about the fact that I was in the swingers lifestyle at the time. And Jimmy was fascinated by it and was asking me all these questions. And he said, you should do a thing on the show. We should do like Ralph's Sex School or Sex University or something. And once a week, you just talk about some sexual aspect of human sexuality because people would be interested in that. So he basically came up with the idea. And so we started doing a weekly segment where I would do a deep dive into some aspect of human sexuality. Usually it was a fetish or a paraphilia or something like that. And it became a big hit. People loved it. So naturally Trip Reeb came in and squashed it and said we couldn't do it anymore.
Why? Yeah. Loveline was huge at the
Enemy
time.
Enemy of Fun.
I mean, considering that's all that they ever talked
Didn't
about.
You work at Playboy? Isn't that part of where this
yeah.
came out of?
Early on when I was doing the show, Playboy TV came knocking and they said they were doing a magazine format show called Sexcetera, and they were looking for a new host. They had sort of rotating hosts, and they asked me if I would do it. And it was similar in format. I would go out and do a story about robot sex or this kind of sex or that kind of sex. The real doll was a big one, the sex dolls they were making down in San Diego.
Right.
And so I was, you know, very much part of that world. So Sex University on the radio was just a spinoff from that. But they said because it was daytime, we couldn't talk about
right,
that stuff.
Right,
it was too
right.
adult versus Loveline, which was done
after
during
10.
Safe Harbor.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They called it Safe Harbor at the FCC. So 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Supposedly, no kids are listening to the radio, so you could do whatever you want. But then
right.
during the day.
I don't know about you guys, but that's when I used to listen to the radio when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The most. That's when I listened.
Yeah, uncensored versions of songs.
Exactly.
And talking weird. And yeah.
So what do you remember about furries, Ralph?
It was one of the aspects of sexuality I had zero experience in, but I remember.
Liar! No.
Remember we all were so interested, I think, because of that Weenie Roast hotel experience. And it was funny how even amongst the community, there was sort of factions. There were some people who had the pleasure of dressing up the
anonymity.
No, the anamorphic aspect of it or whatever, of, you know, sort of the taking on the animal personality, like their spirit animals were part of their costume and get up and stuff. And then there was the other side who was totally,
you're doing The Shining, basically
having sex. You're right, having right. sex in the costumes, and there were trap doors built into the costumes, you know, in certain places, so that everybody could keep their giant mascot
and that
heads
totally
on.
Makes sense. I can see where there's a really G-rated version of it, and they're just yes. like they're really nice and whatever. And then there's like, let's do this.
Right. There's My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic on yes. this side.
Right.
Can we just acknowledge, because that scene in The Shining did not made sense to me for the first time when the furries were at our hotel. I had wondered about that scene because it's so uncomfortable. You're like, why is there a bear on its knees right. in front of this guy and his pants are down and like, right. what's happening?
You find that door open in that yes. slow take to the yes. camera when they're looking at you.
God. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kat said, oh, I get that now. Yeah. The other problem with the furry community is that there are younger people in it and older people in it as well. So it's like you have some underage people. So you have to sort of be careful with how you talk to them or whatever you say. And it was just such a bizarre experience at that hotel trying yeah. to interact. Some would talk to you. Some would just act like they haven't talked in their lives and would just close you out. And Ralph, you'll like this. Aisa told us that the furries were thrilled that we wanted to interact with them. They loved it because they just figured we would make fun or ignore.
They did not know the staff of K-Rock. I mean,
yeah. basically, no idea. No idea.
I don't know how we could have ignored that either. That's
no.
wild.
God,
it's
no.
like one group of outsiders meeting another group of outsiders,
exactly.
just with less fur.
Ralph, if you had a fursona, what would it be?
Ah, nice.
Ooh, a fursona. I think I'd be a tiger.
Ah.
Yeah.
I like it. I was going to say lion.
Kevin would be a llama. We know this.
How
would be a llama?
Llamas do spit. I love that. I do love that.
Did you ever hook up with said llama, by the way, Kevin?
No, of course not. I made a joke, Ralph, that did joke. A llama ever complain to you, Aisa, that I tried to f*** him? And now these two are trying to keep it alive like it was actually a thing.
We know the truth.
He didn't complain, I'll tell you that much.
Right? Yeah. He said, Aisa said, I wanted to apologize to him. And I said, apologize? That was the best night of his life.
Word.
I think that's true. One of the talents that Ralph had on our show was taking something minute and making it huge. Things that I wouldn't think of. Like we talked about the Kevining picture. And it was just, it's the worst picture of me that's ever been taken, right?
That's not minute. That's like so ridiculous that it's like it's classic. I mean, what?
Can we all do the Kevining?
I remember thinking at the time, this is going to be a funny bit. We're going to laugh about it, and then we'll move on and do something else. And it became this thing that was
huge.
All listeners would do the pose, and then when they met me, they would ask me to do it, and I would go, no. But I think you're the one that blew the flames on that one, Ralph. You sort of started that becoming a thing for everyone.
I absolutely did. I remember distinctly, it was a publicity campaign for ArcLight Cinemas.
Mm-hmm.
They had come to us and they said, we want to do a series of local Los Angeles personalities talking about their experience at ArcLight Cinemas. And we're going to do an interview. And we're going to do a photo shoot. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool because I love the ArcLight. And so they shot us all. And I was like in a normal pose. And then for some reason, the picture they chose to use for Kevin was this ridiculous him like staring off with his thumbs up. It was like a mistake. It was like somebody made a mistake. And yet they ran with it.
Yeah. They said, which one should we use out of all these? And I said, just don't use this one.
Never say that.
Apparently that was my mistake because that's the one
Ralph,
they used.
I mean, yes. Kevin had said that when bands and artists used to come in and the management would say, whatever you do, don't ask them this question. That's the first thing y'all ask them. Of course.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. True.
Yeah.
So when we finally saw the finished product, I was like, this is the greatest picture anyone's ever
totally.
Taken of
yes.
anyone.
Yes.
And I was obsessed with it. I couldn't stop. I couldn't get over it. So I just kept talking about it and talking about it and doing it. And we started taking pictures in the office of all the staff doing it. And we put it up on the website. And it just became a phenomenon. And rightly so.
The guy that played Kenneth the Page on 30 Rock.
Yes.
Got Tina Fey to do it. So Tina Fey was.
I didn't know that. Oh my god, I love that. I love that show. 30 Rock.
It became such a huge thing.
Yeah, I just remember going to the ArcLight, and Ralph, I couldn't agree with you more. I loved ArcLight. I'm so unhappy that they don't exist anymore. Yeah. But every time I go, there would be Kevin, great big huge picture of Kevin. I'm getting
it
my
was
popcorn.
Huge.
Yeah, yeah. And there he is up there. I'm like, oh, yep. God.
And then they eventually got a hold of me and said, hey, we're really sorry. We thought that that's the one you wanted us to use. And I said, what would make you think I would want that picture? But then they said, we'll change it. We're so sorry. And I was like, I sort of feel like it's got some momentum now. We can't change it. We have to leave it.
It's taken on a life of its own.
Because Ralph, it took on a life of its own.
And then Omar, I think, or Omar and I both, we did a song, remember? Do the Kevining or whatever.
Oh,
there was like
I
a
do.
Jingle that went for it. And
oh,
it became
my God.
A long running.
We have to find that.
But let's face it, we loved those things because if we found something that we could ride for months or whatever, it was awesome because it was a little bit less content we had to come up with every day as we were trying to crank the show out. You know, I would look back on those days and I look at the amount of content we had to create on a daily basis, Monday through Friday. It was just an enormous amount. It was like this beast that constantly had to be fed. It was ridiculous.
Morning shows work so hard, and especially Los Angeles, and especially K-Rock, because the expectations are so high for K-Rock listeners that, I mean, it's I don't think you guys must be exhausted at this point, finally having been done with it. I mean, Kevin, you actually sleep in until late these days. You don't get up at 3 a.m. You're not coming up with all that shit and everything. But I mean, what you created over that time, and I'm so glad some of it exists. And a lot of that was recorded by someone, and I think that's where the Jacques thing came from, right?
Yes, Kevin and Bean Archive.
I'm glad a lot of it is still out there because I want to be digging through it as we go forward.
I heard Conan O'Brien talking about this and his late night TV show, and somebody asked him if he was upset that it was gone, and he said yes, but the beast of having to put out quantity over quality, you want to get quality, but you have to get quantity. You have to fill the time no matter what, and you make it the best you can, but it does become, and I'm not complaining because it was a great, great, great job, but it does become a monster that you can't stop feeding, and it weighs on you like crazy. Everything you see, every TV show, you have to pay attention. And we emailed Ralph. I still don't check my emails to this day because I hated how much we had to email each other for the show.
Yeah.
50 emails back and forth every day. And it was like, oh, I just can't do this anymore. But it was fantastic.
You guys like created such a, I don't know, this relationship. And I always think about how many people were behind microphones and you were so good at not stepping over each other.
Yes.
And just reading the beats in the room and Beans dropping from another planet. He's dropping in drops and you're all just making this thing. Like it was like, you know, it's like baseball, you know, when it's all working. And it was really impressive. I don't think you get as much credit as you should for all of that
actual
execution.
Totally agree. And I don't think anybody on the outside listening has any idea how much work went into that every single day.
It's funny because now I'm doing, Monday through Friday, I do the Ralph Report on Patreon.com, which is very similar in sort of format to a morning radio show. It's, you know, entertainment news and recurring bits and things like that. But I do it all myself. And I recognized early on in the process how much I didn't appreciate, you know, Omar and Lightning and Dave, the King of Mexico, and everybody behind the scenes who was responsible to help and to produce and to find tape and cut edit stuff. And it was just this massive group undertaking. And I think they don't get enough credit because those of us who were on the microphones, you know, got a lot of attention, and there were so many people behind the scenes, Christine and all these other great people who made it all possible.
And, you know, the opposite of that for me is that I had always just been on by myself. So it wasn't until we went to KLOS, Kevin and I, that I finally actually worked with someone on the air, and to have you, Ralph, do bits for us on KLOS and the extra support really changed my perception of how it can be done and how good it can be if you're not just, you know, when you bring in extra thoughts and ideas. And yes, my fire alarm is going off, so I should.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
You need to run?
I do. I just smoke
don't
already.
Stop.
But, you know, I'm enjoying
don't
this
stop.
So much.
Keep
I'm
recording, Kevin.
Yep.
Will yes. Do. Let's yeah. see what
we
goes
need
down.
The last words of Sluggo.
You know the dog on fire and saying this is fine. That's me right now.
This is our moment.
Ralph, were you the one that fanned the flame? Sorry, Sluggo. Of the Zero Club, was that you?
Yes. All based off a story you told where you said you'd like to get as close to empty on your gas tank as possible.
I don't like to. And I knew I would be made fun of, but I just start thinking, oh, I'm a little bit late. I have 14 miles left. I'm going 10. I'm fine. Like, it just
always
work
blew
out
me away that you that wouldn't way. Go get gas. It's like yes. there's a gauge right there. It tells you yes. how much you have and how much you need.
Yes.
And this was another thing where I told a story and then it became this huge thing where people would take pictures of their odometer and their gas gauge and send them in. It was a Zero Club. We had T-shirts. It became this huge thing. You were really great at that, Ralph.
Well, I came out of necessity because, excuse me, we had to create all this content on a regular basis. And anything that we could mine from our own personal lives or experiences or the relationships that we had amongst ourselves on the air, anything that would, you know, there's plenty of stuff I tried to fan the flames on that just died that nobody cared about. But every once in a while, you could hit on something that would catch the listeners' imaginations or that they would really respond to. And then you could, you know, ride that.
Do you think
time.
The Zero Club kind of speaks to maybe Kevin's personality that he like will just push himself to the point where he's going to break? And then I would think a lot of K-Rock listeners in particular kind of live that same sort of way.
Yes, they just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Much like Kevin.
I did change my story slightly to you're not really living until you're at zero. I mean, don't send me a picture with 3 miles left. That's nothing. You're not really living until you're at zero. And it became a
Kevin,
thing.
To this day, I think about you when my gas is like on the last block. Every time I
what?
Think of you.
How low do you let it get?
You know, I found out on a road trip that the last block isn't the last block. It's when it starts blinking. That's when it's like, you have like 20 seconds and then you're going to die kind of thing. So I just, you know, I keep it solid. And if it starts blinking, that's when I freak out. But I think of you every time when I'm
I have an that. Electric car now and I hooked it up to the charger last night because it only had 14 miles left on the charge. It just happens that way. Don't shake your
no
head.
No matter the technology, Kevin will always be Kevin.
Shake your head. No, Ralph.
So true.
Let's talk lawyers. I haven't had anybody to discuss lawyers much with because to me, it felt like it was a war between the Kevin and Bean Morning Show and the lawyers. It just seemed like everything was pushing a rock uphill. They took the worst case scenario and assumed it was true of us. And we spent hours and hours in meetings and endless time trying to get past our lawyers. Do you feel that way, that it was a battle?
I feel like all of management spent their time demanding, exciting, adventurous radio that would capture listeners and time spent listening and do something different and really put yourselves out there. And we were constantly berated that we weren't doing enough. And then whatever we did, they would bring us into an office and tell us to stop doing it. It was this endless tug of war between you guys aren't being adventurous enough, think outside the box and do crazy things. We need attention versus, oh, what you guys did there, it was way over the line. You have to stop doing what you're doing. It was endlessly frustrating.
I do remember having a lawyer come to my house, and I do remember which lawsuit this was about. A lawyer came to my house.
To your house?
And
wow.
Read through a transcript of an email I sent, I think it was. And it was a bunch of emails back and forth. What should we do? What should we do? What should we do? And then I just wrote back, my dick. And I remember.
Like you do. That's the perfect
what did you,
response.
What did you write, Kevin?
My dick.
My dick. My dick.
Making sure I heard it correctly.
And so the lawyer is in my house going, what did you mean by that?
Oh, for
And I said,
sake.
What are you crazy? Do you think I'm actually suggesting a sexual encounter? What?
Well, I wish you had told me that before I actually sucked.
Ah!
I didn't know you weren't serious. All a wasted time.
It wasn't wasted, bro.
Were you in a bear suit?
Not for you.
No, he's in a llama suit. So.
But it was stuff like that where you go, use some common sense. I'm not, right. Of course we're not.
Here's the problem is that they don't recognize that in a creative atmosphere, when you're desperately trying to come up with ideas and you're in a room full of, you know, emotionally stunted men, there's going to be all kinds of off-color language and inappropriate things because the shock value of those things was the stuff that made us laugh the hardest when we were pitching ideas.
Of course. And everybody that's listening.
Right. And so you're hoping you have a certain bubble of protection there, which is it allows you to be ridiculous in the room so that whatever comes out and ends up on the air is the product of all that stuff. And they never gave us a break when it came to that. It was
imagine
always
the stuff in the room that never made it on the air. That was far more insane, right?
Well, that's what was in the emails. That's the problem. What was in conversations we had amongst each other that we thought were safe. And then sometimes people in our own staff would turn on us and stab us in the back and sue and things. So,
yeah, good times. I was. It's funny because from 2015 to 2020, I sort of just felt like this is really tiring and I'm so exhausted from dealing with people who give us input that don't understand at all what we're doing.
And then you came to KLOS and found afternoons where you just wander in the middle of the day and you go home and you have your evening and it fucking rules and you don't have to do anything.
Sluggo was flabbergasted by the fact that I always show up late. He can't get his head around that.
Always at least 6 minutes late. Almost. But the thing is, it's almost exactly the same amount of time late. Like 6 minutes. So it's so easy to fix that. Just 6 minutes earlier.
You would think. Right? How many times, Kevin, were you literally on the phone on your own morning show where we would talk to you in the morning and you would be calling from your car?
I don't know, because it was always a race. Bean started the show with some sound effects, and he would put them all together and start the show. And
like he does on Cup of Tea in a chat right now.
Yes. And the number of times I heard that while in my car is uncountable. There's no way to know. Like, I would be close, and I would pull into the driveway and run. And just as soon as it said, and now the Kevin and Bean show, and I would go, yeah, I'm here.
Now, dude, how do you do this? Because now Kevin comes on right after me on K-Rock at 2 in the afternoon, and you are always on time. What has changed?
I've grown up, Sluggo.
Yeah.
I've grown up.
He's a new man.
What happened? How?
Well,
how
he can
possible?
Sleep late now. He's waking up with normal people time.
It really does make a huge difference. Do you still wake up early, Ralph?
I only wake up early when I got to get my kid to school. Other than that, I try to sleep in. But again, because I'm doing sort of what we did with the morning show, I got to hit the ground running and start pulling audio clips and video clips and stuff and looking for story ideas. So I'm at it pretty early, but not as early as we used to be. That was ungodly.
It was, yeah. I always thought that the schedule by itself sucked, and then doing the morning show was a lot of work. But even if you didn't do the morning show, being on that schedule, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who are on that schedule for whatever job they have.
Yeah.
Real jobs.
Yeah. Sort of the middle of the night, and it blows. It's really hard to have any life outside of that.
I think it sucked the life out of me. It almost killed me, quite frankly. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Just getting up, and I'm like a late night person anyway, so I probably wouldn't get the sleep that I should have. And after almost 20 years of that, I really felt like I had been kicked around.
The amount of energy of creativity that you are putting out in this like solid 4 hours is so intense. It's exhausting. Like, people don't understand that after every day you just gave it everything and you're empty.
You do have to live at a level that's not normal. So
right.
I'm not that interesting of a person. I have to step it up when I'm doing the show every single day and really try to, I don't know, just be better. If I did a show by myself where I didn't care about ratings, it wouldn't be that good. But also, that sort of helped, I think, with all of us feeling the same way. We would bounce off each other, and there were times when some of us were better than others, and it was just you know, it's that the camaraderie is one of the things I miss about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you tend to, when you're on the air anyway, at least I know I did, you find an aspect of your personality and you kind of crank it up a couple notches. You know, none of us were off air who we were on air, but who we were on air was sort of an exaggerated version of some aspect of ourselves. And I think you almost end up creating a character. And, you know, people always ask me about Kevin and Bean when I go out and they say, is Kevin really as you know, forgetful or is this or that? And I was like, well, no, nobody is. And Bean's not as quirky. He's close. Don't get me wrong. And Bean's not quite as quirky or as much of a weirdo as he seems. And, you know, I wasn't nearly as angry. I was pretty close, but not as angry as I seemed when I was on the air. So you just find things that work, you know, with each other. And that was part of the secret, I think.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about your time at K-Rock that we haven't brought up?
Wow. How do you encapsulate that much time into...
Clearly, we're going to need to bother you and have you come back at some point.
Oh, anytime.
Good. Thank you so much.
I always describe our morning show as going 100 miles an hour through a neighborhood. And then somebody, when you're done, somebody asks, tell me about that third house on the left. And you go,
right.
I have no idea.
That's
perfect. We would churn through so much material. We wouldn't even remember what we did the day before. And that's not just my memory. That was kind of everybody.
Yeah. I just remember it as a long sort of dysfunctional family where you enjoy giving each other a hard time and teasing each other and working each other over. And that was sort of the energy of the show. And so that's what I miss like the kidding around and the needling both off air and on air. And, that can be exhausting too, though. I mean, there's sometimes where we really would get on each other's nerves, and those moments could be genuine. But it's like any family, you know. Sometimes you have a rift with a brother or sister or something, and then by the time it's over, it's you know, nobody can remember what you were fighting about. But I just remember ultimately how much fun it was, and how creative it was, and how rewarding it was, and how people would come up to us and talk about how we got them through difficult times in their lives and what the show meant to them. And I know when they let me go, the outpouring of people talking about how angry they were that I wasn't going to be, you know, in their car with them on their drive to work anymore. It's easy to not recognize, the impact you're having because it's just three or four of you in a room. And you tend not to recognize what's happening outside of those walls until you meet people face to face. And so it was a remarkable time in my life.
If you think about the impact that you're having, you're not doing your job well.
Yeah, like you can't really
focus on that. You have to focus on what you're doing and leave that and hope that that is working. And it sometimes, you know, people will say incredibly moving things about I lost a parent when I was in high school. And you guys got me through. And I would think, what are you talking about? How did we get you through? That's crazy. And then I finally realized it was just a distraction from the pain.
Right. Yeah.
It's just a distraction. Mm-hmm. And then we made it fun and okay, great. And so that really makes me happy about those 30 years.
But at its best, K-Rock had like a through line that went through all of us from the morning show to Kat to Sluggo, to Jed. I mean, it was a family on a much larger scale, too. Even though we only had, each of us had our own little pocket of time and what we were doing, those moments where we could all be together, whether it was Weenie Roast or Acoustic Christmas or whatever gathering, you know, signing the calendar or whatever, those were some of my favorite moments where we all got to be in one place at one time. It was just a great time.
We were all very much on the same page, which I think is pretty unusual for any radio station. And K-Rock, you know, is just, that's how it is. But
well, there was an enormous amount of talent at that station at one time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, crazy.
And I think we all respected what the other people did because we were like, damn, they're good at what they do.
Yeah. Dysfunctional talent. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Ralph, you're the best. Thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
What a pleasure, guys. Anytime. I appreciate the ask. So I'm around.
Corny,
nice.
Full recap of what we talked about with specifics from the beginning to the end.
Good job, Corny.
Go ahead.
I was just about to give the recap, but sure, cut me off right before the grand finale.
My bad. I apologize. That's on me. That one's on me, Corny. I'll own that one.
He's like teenage Groot, man. He's just
he is teenage Groot. That's true.
I mean, if go I just corny. Say I am corny, will that
nice one? I am corny. He
understood that joke.
Good. Yes. In
context. How about that?
Done. I guess we're not gonna throw him away after. I'll delete him.
Uno, two, tres,
dos. Three-fourths human with
Kevin Cat
and Soto
and AI.